Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
It's a sad thing if you think about it. You know, asking Jesus to go away, that's not anything that anybody really should want to do. But people ask Jesus to go away all the time because Jesus is going to rearrange your life. Jesus is going to turn things upside down. And some people don't want that. Although they're miserable in their sin, they'd rather be miserable in their sin than let somebody else control their life. That's a sad but a true fact.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Luke chapter 8. Now here's Pastor Brian.
This storm is so fierce that it's causing them to fear for their lives. And so the disciples, they went and they woke Jesus saying, "Master, Master, we are going to drown." He got up and he rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. And he said, "Where is your faith? Where is your faith?" Now, why did he say, "Where is your faith?" Well, he said, "Where's your faith?" because he had earlier said, "Let us go to the other side of the lake." So where is your faith? How come you're doubting what we're doing? I told you what we're doing. We're going to the other side of the lake. We're not going to the bottom of the lake. Where's your faith? Now, I mean, do you guys ever put yourselves in the place of the disciples? But what would it have been like to be in this situation? And all they know to do is, I mean, Jesus seems like the only one who could possibly maybe do something, but I would imagine even in their own minds, they don't know what Jesus is going to do. But he awakens and he stands and he rebukes the wind and the sea and it immediately calms. I mean, what would it be like to be there experiencing that in that moment? Well, it tells us that in fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? Who is this?" That sounds exactly like how we would respond. Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. Amazing. Incredible. But this is, you know, as we go on, for them, their whole experience with Jesus from their very first encounter with him, their entire time of ministry with him, approximately 3 years, it's all a journey into a deeper faith in who he is. And of course, by the time everything's said and done and Jesus goes to the cross and rises from the dead and ascends into heaven and sends them out into the world, they go out, they fully know who Jesus is when they go out. And whatever they confront, they do it knowing that he even commands the wind and the sea and they obey him. And that's our Jesus. That's the one that we're serving as well. Now, they sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. There's, just really quickly, there's, in Mark's gospel, it says, it's the same story. It says that they went to the region of the Gadarenes. So there's some, you know, well, which was it? Was it the Gerasenes or the Gadarenes? And where they're going, as you would go across this, the Sea of Galilee, you come to the area that was known and is mentioned by Matthew and Mark as the Decapolis. the Decapolis consisted originally of 10 cities. And they were 10 Greek cities that were established after the time of Alexander the Great by the Seleucid rulers who ruled the region. So they were Greek cities, originally 10, but they had expanded over time. So both Gadara and Gesera were in that region. And now some say Gesera was 40 miles away, Gadara was 8 miles away, but nobody can be absolutely certain about the geography at that time. But we know that Jesus now has gone over to this area of the Decapolis. He's gone over to this area that is predominantly Gentile. It's the center of Greco-Roman religion and philosophy. And those cities are very proactive in pushing against Judaism and seeking to keep out the Jewish influence and to retain the Greekness and the Romanness of that culture. So this is the place that Jesus goes to. So although there would be Jews that lived there, they were living among majority Gentiles. So they cross over to Gadarenes. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from that town. And for a long time, this man had worn no clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torture me." For Jesus had commanded the impure spirit to come out of the man. Many times it seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Mark's account is a little more thorough, but we get the picture here. This is a highly tormented individual. And I have to say, if I were one of the disciples, I would have just thought, can I go back to the boat, Jesus? We'll let you deal with this. I mean, this is freaky stuff, right? So they're met by this man right when they come to the shore. He's right there. You have to know this. Jesus knew that man was there, and that's why he went there. That's the only reason why Jesus would have gone there. But here was an image bearer, and he was possessed, demon-possessed. Now, we saw Mary Magdalene. Jesus had cast 7 demons out of her. We find demons appearing throughout the gospel accounts especially, but we do find them in the book of Acts. We do find references to them in the rest of the New Testament. In the Old Testament, there's very little reference to demons, but they are referred to in the Old Testament. The idols of the nations, the false gods, the Asherah and Baal and all of them, there was a demonic component to all of that worship. And so Moses makes reference to the children of Israel as they were sacrificing to these false gods. He said they were sacrificing to demons, not to God. But there isn't any real clear references, at least in regard to the interaction between the demonic and the human in the Old Testament. Not much. There's some teaching about stay away from certain things and so forth. And then we have, like, you know, Daniel tells us about the powers in the heavens, the prince of Persia and the prince of Greece and all of that. We put it all together. But it's not till we come to the New Testament and to the Gospels that we actually find people who are controlled by demons. So the word demon-possessed is the word, the word is probably literally better translated demonized. And so there were varying degrees of demonization. We Christians can experience a certain degree of demonization in as much as we can be attacked by demons. Paul tells us that. He talks to us about that in Ephesians. He talks to us about it in Corinthians. This is what we commonly refer to as spiritual warfare, where we encounter the demonic. But this is a case of severe demonization, the level of demonization that is not even possible for a Christian to experience. This man is thoroughly indwelt by these demonic forces and completely controlled by them. He has no control over his life at this point. And this would happen. And it's interesting that it's in the public ministry of Jesus that we find these types of experiences where we hadn't heard much about them in the Old Testament. Suddenly, during the ministry of Jesus, it's sort of like all hell breaks loose and the demons are running rampant at the time of Christ. And again, I think God allows this at that time for the specific purpose of displaying his power and his authority over the demonic. But here is this man, and it's a horrific situation that he's in, and he can't be restrained at all. He has superhuman strength. He's able to break the chains. And like I said, we have further references in the New Testament to these kinds of things. And then on throughout church history, we have references to the demonic. And there's no reason to believe that there isn't plenty of demonic activity going on today. In some places, it's more obvious and it's more heightened and blatant than other places. Some places, it's more subtle. But it's very real still to this day. So Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. So a legion was, remember we talked about a centurion last week. A centurion was, he was the head over 100 soldiers. There were 60 legions or 60 centurions to a legion. So you have roughly 6,000 soldiers in a legion. So whether there's literally 6,000 demonic entities possessing this man, or it's just a general term for many, he is possessed by many spirits. And we saw Mary Magdalene, remember, 7 demons were cast out of her. And they begged Jesus repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into the pigs, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this to the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at the feet of Jesus, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Now, this whole story here, it's so interesting. I mean, first of all, that the demons begged to be cast into the pigs. So for some reason, we don't know why, but for some reason, the demons do not want to be extracted from this person and then go into a place where they're not in an embodied situation. Why? We don't know. Obviously, they prefer that. Maybe it's because of this fear, don't cast us into the abyss. So they know that there is a judgment day coming. But then, some have asked, well, why did Jesus even allow them? I mean, why was Jesus even seemingly in agreement with the demons to allow them to go into the pigs? We don't know that either. Now, the pigs. The pigs. Now, if you know anything about Judaism, and if you know anything about kosher laws, if you know nothing else, you do know this. Jews do not eat pork. Pork is absolutely forbidden. Now, again, this is an area that is dominated by Gentiles. It was originally part of the land of Israel, but now at this time it's dominated by Gentiles. As I said, Jews are living there. It could be that these are Gentile pig farmers, but it could be they were Jewish. They weren't eating the pigs, they were selling the pig to the Gentile neighbors. And that's a possibility. Maybe it's right. But this was against the law of Moses. So in some ways, Jesus is just exercising his right as the Lord, as the lawgiver, to deal with this transgression that's taking place there in the land. Now today, some people, there are people today who are highly offended by the fact that Jesus sent the demons into the pigs and think that Jesus was guilty of cruelty to animals and so forth, and that Jesus needs to explain himself because, why did he do this? And I don't know that you could ever even give any kind of an answer to a person who thinks that way that would be satisfactory. Maybe you could. But I think in the end, we just have to realize, Jesus is the creator of the pigs. He's the Lord. He's made everything. And if this is something that he chose to do at the time, maybe because of the violations of the law, whatever the case, we don't know. But Jesus can do that. That's his prerogative to do that. And so he does do that. But then it's the response of the people that's so bizarre. Because could it be that they were just so invested in their business that the thought of losing their business was greater than surrendering to the authority of Jesus? I mean, why would they have been so bothered? And why would they have been so fearful? And why wouldn't they have looked at this man who everybody apparently knew? And why wouldn't they have said, oh my gosh, what a wonderful thing. Look at him. He's normal. But they didn't do any of that. Instead, they asked Jesus to go away. And he complied with their request. I mean, it's a sad thing if you think about it. Asking Jesus to go away, that's not anything that anybody really should want to do. But people ask Jesus to go away all the time, honestly. Because Jesus is going to rearrange your life. Jesus is going to turn things upside down. And some people don't want that. Some people, although they're miserable in their sin, they'd rather be miserable in their sin than let somebody else control their life. That's a sad but a true fact. So he's dressed, he's in his right mind. They ask Jesus to leave, and he gets into the boat and he left. And the man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away. This is really interesting too. So here's a man who has just had this unbelievable deliverance. And of course, you could understand he would want to go with Jesus. But Jesus doesn't allow him. Instead, he says, return home and tell how much God has done for you. Wow. return home and just tell them what God has done for you. And what the man maybe didn't realize at the moment is that in doing that, he really would be following Jesus, even though he wasn't going with him in the boat to the other side of the lake. He's following Jesus because this is the mission of Jesus, to bring good news to people. And so the man is sent back, and he went and he told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. Now, notice Jesus says, go tell them the great things God has done for you. And he goes and he tells them the great things that Jesus did for him. This guy makes the connection. He makes the connection. God, Jesus, he did this for me. Jesus is God. Jesus is the one. And I could imagine that he had a fruitful ministry among the people that Jesus sent him back to. You know, this is a guy who had like an extraordinary testimony. It's like all he had to do is show up clothed in his right mind, and people are like, wow, there's a God. There can't be any explanation apart from there being a God. I love those kind of stories. And occasionally, you know, we hear those stories where it's just so obvious that something so incredible has happened in a person's life, you can't even begin to comprehend it apart from something supernatural that's happened. And that would have been the case here. Great story. Now, there's much more that could be said about the demonic and all of that, but remember, we're studying through the New Testament, so we don't have to cover everything in one chapter. We'll get it as we make our way through. So now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. No one could heal her, and she had spent all of her money on physicians and was not well. So she came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." You could almost just see Peter, like, "Come on, Jesus, what do you mean? Who touched you? Everybody's touching you." And but Jesus is asking a very specific question. Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know, for power has gone out from me." And then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet in the presence of all the people. She told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace."
For the month of December, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, "Is Christmas Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the World's Most Famous Story" by Rebecca McLaughlin. Although the holiday season can be filled with fond memories from childhood or the prospect of more to come, the holiday season can also be one of the most difficult times of the year. The longing for those we miss can intensify, or the loneliness felt throughout the year can be amplified. Whether the holiday season brings you excitement or dread, Rebecca McLaughlin will introduce you to the man born 2,000 years ago and explain the significance of his birth for you today. She will deal with the incredible claims of Christianity and will help you see that it is perhaps more important than you think. The book is Christmas Unbelievable, Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the World's Most Famous Story by Rebecca McLaughlin, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of Luke. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.